Everybody ready? Ready? Okay, we're going to call this workshop to order. Charles, from understand, will not make it tonight. And we'll start with 2.01 under current business, DOT presentation regarding improvements at First Avenue and SR 26. Bob Romine, you want to fill us in on what's going on there?
Okay, thanks.
And then we'll allow some public input. I see we have some businesses here, so if you have questions, I know Bob will be able to answer those for you, and then I know the council, I'm sure, will probably have some too. So it's all yours, Bob.
Thank you. I'm Bob Romine. I'm project engineer for Othello Stage 2. Stage 1, we did the regrading underneath Highway 26 last year, and this is the second part to that. I'm going to walk you through just the basics first, and then we'll get everything on the table and start discussing some of the design elements that we're considering and get public input on it. So.
Rebecca, can you turn the mic up a little bit?
Thanks. Okay. Is that better? Yeah. Okay. Like I said, stage one was the regrading underneath the interchange, the overcrossing on Highway 26, and now I'm here to talk about stage two. The idea of this one, of course, was to get the trucks to come underneath and get away from this intersection. What we're trying to do here is clean up the intersection as far as accidents go, and that's the whole premise of this project. We have a lot of accidents in this intersection, I think, as everybody well knows. And so the first step was to get all the trucks, try to start getting trucks from the south, northbound on 24 away from here, and get them to come up underneath here. And that's what we've done last year, is to improve the vertical clearance. Stage two is, there's a couple things. The primary thing, of course, is this intersection right here. The whole plan is now to start looking at how we're going to do a little bit of movement restrictions on this. This is a little bit outdated, and I'll get to a more updated channelization plan that we're kind of looking at conceptually. But the idea here is that we are still going to provide for left turn movement here. Caveat is that we'll monitor that over the years, and if there's accidents appearing, then we'll be looking at eliminating this piece right here. The other things that will be happening here is the cross traffic from First Street down onto the spur here and then down. That'll be restricted. We will have some raised islands here and here. There will be right turn movement westbound. There'll be any left. If you want to go eastbound, you'll be coming down and around on the spur and going this way. There's a circulatory pattern, and I'll scroll up here a little bit. There's Columbia, Waluk, and then Scutney, the next roads up. We're looking at, so you basically have right, and you'll have left, no crosses, and you'll have a left on. And that's basically the end result of the project on stage two. Then we come up to Waluk Street, and this is when I mentioned the circulatory pattern is getting folks on and off of the highway. They'll come up now up to right now what we're looking at is Waluk Street. Stage two involves improving the radiuses. The last time I was here back in May, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. It was the finals on NCAA, that's what I remember. My team lost, so it didn't matter. But anyway, what we're going to do here is there's some radius improvements is what we're looking at. We did talk about the last time, this is Clearwater. Any radius improvements here has significant impacts to the business, so we're really looking at staying away from that. Everywhere else, there's still opportunity to, basically when I'm talking about radius improvements is right now these corners are not real conducive to trucks turning. We explored different design trucks, and right now we're at the WB50, which is a pretty standard truck for this area. What that means is we'll have some radiuses that will improve through here, here, and here that will provide turning movements so they don't cross over to the other lane when they make their turning movements. And that's the piece up here is just to improve that turning. Also, what we're looking at is there's some incomplete sidewalks. We'll connect those up. The city is looking at restricting parking along the road And that's pretty much it in a nutshell for Luke Street. We are entertaining the next street up as another possibility. I have another photo I'll show here in a minute, but we're also exploring if there's maybe it makes sense to go up further up north to the next street up. The only problem is we do know it's better to keep it as close to the highway as possible for this road. Folks will know that, okay, I got Columbia, I'll shoot across, or trucks will, but the corners won't be there for trucks, so we have to pick one and stick with it pretty much in order to provide that turning movement for trucks. This one here fell off the plate pretty early because of the building right here. Would have to tear down a portion of this building or all of it in order to make a little radius improvement. It made no sense dollars-wise. Just wouldn't pencil out for the money we have available. So unfortunately, this one fell off the table pretty early on, so we had to go to the next one up, and that's Luke Street right there. One other thing I did miss. This piece right here, this is a radius. Right now it's pretty difficult for trucks to make this turn all the way without encroaching into this lane coming down. So we'll be widening this radius a little bit for the trucks so they get onto the spur. You know, that's the last piece down here that we have to touch. And that's basically it in a nutshell. This whole meeting is that we're going to lay it all out and we're looking for input, basically put everything on the table and try to get whatever we can from the community on this. There are some significant impacts here to this business here when we start restricting movements, obviously, and we'll get into that as well. We've looked at some different options with the city, and we have one that works pretty well, but for the business, it's not always ideal, so we really want to get some input on that. Before I move on, does anybody have any questions? Okay. So just jump into the meat of it right now. And this is the intersection down on Highway 26 and 1st. This is what we have right now for our preliminary channelization. As I mentioned, left turn coming up northbound onto 1st. You have your right, or excuse me, your left heading westbound. You have your right going eastbound. Of course, the turning movements for westbound traffic, they can turn up 1st Street. You know, with the lane restrictions, we have a raised island here, a raised island here, and then all the striping that comes in here. Looking at the left turn movement on the 1st Street, we have provided, or we're looking at providing a right left turn pocket right here for this business. They have two accesses right now, one right here and one right up here. And cars, I know I've done it in the past, has come through here and just shoot across, get into the gas station. With this configuration, that goes away, but they still have the opportunity, and any westbound traffic still has the opportunity to come across, get in here, get in this right turn, left turn pocket, and then access in here. And then they have their exit coming around this way if they're going westbound still. Channelization wise, obviously, one of these lanes is going to drop off as you're coming down into the intersection. So we have some more islands that we're striping out. There's still access for this business. We still have this access, and of course, I forget what the name of this street is, but there's still access points here. We don't really touch anything. Still provide turning movement to get onto here if you're heading southbound on 1st to get into here. It's just simply the a little bit tighter configuration, but the whole idea is to clean up the accidents down here. So this business here is the one I'm most concerned about right now as far as access and input. So I hope, are they here today? Are they? You're here. Yeah. Thank you for showing up. So anyway, that's this piece in a nutshell. Of course, with restricting left turn movements. So now if you want to go south on 24, the plan will be to come up, go up 1st Street for trucks to go all the way up to Wallute, come down, round, and down this way. It's a little bit longer, but you're eliminating a lot of accidents. There's a lot of accidents with left turns and collisions, so that's what we're trying to clean up here. So we're going to take away this left turn lane that would be a direct feed into this. And that's one of the downsides of trying to clean up accidents is you start restricting movements, and that's what we're doing. We are taking away this lane as we get to here. There's left turn, but these basic islands are trying to direct traffic, you know, to funnel them down here, or they're going to go off to the business to the east.
Why the need for those islands to direct that traffic back there? There's a left-hand turn lane there. Why are we impeding that?
The more we're there right now is point of discussion. Trying to minimize any conflicts, obviously. Personally, I don't know if we really need to stick this one in here, but as you're starting to get down here, we're trying to remove the points of conflict. And if you got a lot of left turn movements and you got a lot of folks coming up north or this way, then you're starting to introduce some conflicts. We're open to discussion on those points in itself, but ideally we know that we have to funnel people at some point in time down into one lane because of what's going on down here, and that's why this one's here right now. This one here, I think, is on the table. We can work with that one because I think it may make more sense to leave that there for refuge for folks that want to take a left and go over here. But I think this one here is probably kind of necessary for the funneling effect for what we're doing down here at this point. Anytime anybody wants to interject or have a question or a comment, please feel free to do so. Okay, I'll just keep moving along then. Okay, this is a more closer view of Wolluke Street that I was talking about earlier with the radius improvements. As you can see, and I'll revisit, this is a Clearwater implement. Obviously, by doing any radius improvements, we're pretty much choking off their parking and access to their building in a lot of ways. So we're really trying to avoid this piece right here. As we look at the other corners, when I talk about the WB50 truck, you can see what we're doing is we're basically shaving these corners off and providing a turning radius so when a truck comes, heads south, it can turn without encroaching over here. And I think right now this is now restriped as a left turn lane. So we've run different templates, and the whole idea is that we don't want cars coming opposing each other in the same lane. And so that's why we're doing these radiuses. Likewise on this corner, same thing. We'll just shave those corners off and over here. And we're looking at connecting up the sidewalks on each side. And also with these accesses, it's important also to provide and to establish dedicated accesses to the businesses so we don't have a lot of free-for-all on and off the roadway. That just cleans it up, and that helps the mobility and safety of the roadway as well.
How do you get the corners, the land itself? Is it on easements, eminent domain, you bargain with the landowners?
There will be some right-of-way acquisitions on this thing. This line right here, and we're really looking at these. We started looking at them again today. That there's still questions whether these are the correct locations for the right-of-way lines. So we're going to go back and look at the monuments and offsets. But as you can see, anything on this side, I can't really. That's not a very good picture. I can't really see the line, and there might be another one over here. But I think this is our right-of-way line. So anything that we encroach outside, or this is. It's a right-of-way take. So I apologize, the lines are a little bit weak on this drawing, so it's not clearly showing it. But let's see if I can zoom in and pull this up, because it kind of shows the square footage take that we're looking at each corner. Okay. This one here is showing approximately 231 square feet. And this one here is 10 square feet. This here is the Pacific Pride, I believe, gas station. And I'm a little concerned because I believe their pole sign is right here within the right-of-way. So if that's the case, then that'll be, if this is in fact the correct right-of-way line, that would mean that the pole would have to be removed and relocated at the owner's expense on this thing.
So when you say right-of-way acquisition, that means the landowner is entitled to no compensation. That's a city right-of-way, and we're entitled to use that land.
No, we have to compensate the landowners for their property that we're buying on this stuff. It's acquired. Part of that, there's a price for the value of the land, and it sometimes, depending on the impacts of the land, there may be some damages also in the pricing.
So but the landowner doesn't want to sell, they have that right?
They do have a right, and there is a process. It's called condemnation. So we go through that. We basically, DOT will offer fair market value. The landowner disagrees with it. They have every right to go and get their own assessment, and they go through that process that way. And it's just part of the process. Any questions on any of these corners?
The only one I have a question on is the one up there on the Clearwater is the business.
Yes.
The other end of Waluke and First. Do we really need that? What if we deny trucks access heading southbound? If you want to go southbound, the only truck lane to be would be Waluke.
Okay, that's a good question. Let me kind of scroll through another exhibit, and we can kind of show a couple things there. That's a very good question. Okay, then this is a little bit closer up, a better close-up of the impacts. This red line is basically a line that's just kind of showing a right-of-way. It's kind of a little adjustable, but bottom line is this is their sidewalk. It's a pretty wide sidewalk, but this is the back of sidewalk. Obviously, when you start seeing in here, you're starting to losing some parking. You're also losing the flow of traffic through their parking zone area. It's just a bad deal all the way around. Now we're going to get to your point of maybe looking at, you're talking about restricting truck traffic coming south on this. Is that okay? Let's go up to scrutiny then.
Didn't we already do that? Did we pass that ordinance yet? We
haven't. What does scrutiny have? Scrutiny has a trucking outfit right here. So then that means their traffic will have to, and maybe because we're not touching that one corner at Clearwater, what do we do to get these trucks onto Broadway? Obviously making a turn here, we did do a turning template, and a WB50 can make this, but they'll wind up in this left turn lane, which is fine. It's not over here, which is good, and they can make it south, but then you have that problem down here at Clearwater on that corner there. So that's kind of like I was down there a couple months ago with Terry Clemens, and we watched a smaller truck that made that left turn at the Clearwater, and it clearly went into the oncoming lane. It was even smaller than the WB50. So I know that corner is not going to work. What do we do about it? Somehow, either you restrict this and force them over to Broadway and then down. But what you're doing then is you're coming down, 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 down. You're making them zigzag. It's a less direct route, but that may be the only option we have here. I did look at talking to Eamon, we did explore this as another option on the table. It's further away from the highway. You still have Waluke and Columbia down here. Most folks are going to try to find the quickest way to turn around and get back onto the highway. So we really have to pick which road's going to work best. And right now, Waluke is the best fit. Scrutiny's another option on the table. Obviously, the only problem with this scrutiny is there's an apartment complex right here, and any radius in front, it's going to be right into the corner of that building right there.
We talked with Bob about scrutiny last week because our truck route goes on First north to scrutiny,
right,
and then it stops. So we explored that and to try to lessen the impact to Clearwater and take that corner out of it. So we looked at turning at those other cross streets anyway. So how do we best make this for everybody?
Well, my idea would be to make First Street truck traffic only to Waluke. So there would be no truck traffic coming south on First Street.
Right.
I don't know how they get on First. They'd have to cut over at Scutney, which made no sense to cut over. You know, they'd channel everything to Broadway, so they're not coming south anywhere on First except from Waluke South. I don't know why trucks need to use First Street. Cut over, they'll never get on First Street.
Jim, I got a comment.
Go ahead.
I thought when we were talking about this a few months ago when you were here, I thought we'd more or less stated that we didn't want anything north of Waluke Street, which would solve the problem with Clearwater, solve the problem with Scutney, where you're going to look like you're going to wipe out that one apartment there. And if we keep that close to Highway 26, you won't have that problem of coming up and around that circle. You get them started coming into Scutney, coming down First Street, what's going to stop them go across and go right on up Scutney on that same street? We'll have corrupting our residential area. So I think you need to drop it back like Mark says. I think we should maintain that to Waluke and not go anything farther north on First Street for trucking.
You're correct, and what we talked about last time is it was our understanding that the piece between Scutney and Waluke was part of a no truck zone, but I think what we found out afterwards it is still part of the truck route, so it would take a revision in your ordinance to make that happen. So when Eamon talked to us about it, we did look at this as an option, you know, just to throw it out there on the table so everybody understood the big picture on everything that we've been looking at. So I agree with you. Closer to the highway, otherwise you start getting encroachment. Trucks might wind up in a residential area or something like that. So,
is that possible if we make that ordinance that no trucks pass Waluke, that we wouldn't have to cut the corner on the Clearwater business? Because in theory, there's no trucks coming that way to turn right.
Certainly you can adopt an ordinance like the one you have and back it up to Waluke Street. And as Bob said, the close proximity to Highway 26, that works. And as Kent said, it eliminates impact to Clearwater. It eliminates impact to the apartment on Scutney. So that would work. We have to make sure, though, that because we're taking trucks off and giving them a route to go back to the east, that works on Waluke. They have a design for that, if that's what you want to do. That's what we're here tonight, is where do we want to go with this? We want to present all the options to you that were out there.
And then one more street there, Warrior or something, and a lot of trucks parked on. And then you got Proville, actually got a lot of trucks there, too.
And Council said you wanted no parking signs put on that street.
But if we cut truck traffic back to Waluke, then that's a non-issue too, because in theory there wouldn't be trucks there on Royal or Scutney, because they shouldn't come that far down.
Do you see any issues with stopping at Waluke?
The trucks, avoiding eliminating the trucks on this?
Right.
To grasp what you just said there. So you're saying heading north? I'm going to have to go. I'll go back to the aerial, the previous. Okay, unfortunately, this doesn't show Scutney. It's got Columbia in.
So you bring traffic north on Curry.
Right. Okay, sorry. It's that coffee to keep me awake, yeah.
West on Waluke.
Okay.
And then south on Broadway. And that would accomplish the trucks going where you want them to.
Right.
Any other impacts on Wall Loop, the radius?
Not really. There's not. There's some utilities. Of course, that's part of any high road project. So not really. Just impacts to the owners on these corners, these three corners right here. That's what we're dealing with right now.
Is that what you'd like us to explore?
Looks like the best alternative.
That would be my first guess. Yeah. I mean, what you'd have to do then from Main Street and all those side streets between Broadway and First, from Main Street to Wall Loop, you'd have to post no trucks, no trucks, no trucks, and on Main Street, you would say no truck left turn onto First.
Right. It's once you got them down there, so you have to get
the funnel off the Broadway, and if they want to come up on, then the only reason they want to come up to First would be to head west on 26. Otherwise, they should stay on Broadway. Or yeah. If they want to go east on 26, they'd go around. They stay on Broadway anyway.
Mm-hmm. So the other consideration is deliveries, local deliveries, not local, but deliveries to the businesses in that area. They would have to know to come in from the south. It's the only way they could get there. Well, they could come down Broadway.
Yeah. Well, I think all that local access, we've already got pretty well covered anyway. So that should take care of that.
Well,
it
might save some money too, than doing the others. There's less property there.
I think they're. That's where we have to explore the right-of-way lines. That was a question that I was looking at with my designer this morning. It was something wasn't adding up there, so we have to go back and relook at our right-of-way lines. Exactly where are those? And it's all in the corners, you know, with the radiuses. And right now, like I said, some of the impacts. The Pacific Pride has their sign right now. It looks like within the right-of-way, so that would be the cost of them. Obviously, anything through here when we get into this gentleman's property or who owns that, same thing. But it's all, we've gone through the exercise of trying to minimize the right-of-way impacts the best we can. Any smaller truck vehicle, I wouldn't recommend it, really, at this point. It just doesn't make sense for the future in my mind. So, but,
So, Bob, if... for some reason we have extra money left over, can that be put towards the street paving?
I'd have to look at that one. I don't think I better say yes, because that's a very good question. We had that discussion with Eamon and Terry and Larry Osborne from, or Larry Julius, and yeah, this street really is not up to structure for the trucks. That's the downside. We talked about the six-year plan and trying to fund it. This is purely a safety project, so rebuilding a roadway, there isn't any much money in this bucket to do that, unfortunately.
Improvements to Wall Loop and Yonah City. There's one improvement that you showed earlier on coming onto First Street off of Broadway, that little spur that goes up the highway.
Yeah. No, First Street onto Broadway.
From Broadway onto First.
Is that the bigger?
Spur.
Oh, a spur. Yeah. Okay,
let's go back to that.
By Evergreen?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, they're doing that now.
This one right here?
This guy.
Yeah. Right. Because yeah. Once you block off the intersection there, 90% of the trucks aren't going to be going that way anymore. Because we work right there on the corner, mm-hmm. coming on that spur, and then they're going to be heading, 90% of the trucks head west. Mm-hmm.
So you're only going to have a few trucks that are going to be heading east off of that corner there?
Just a few, but...
Yeah, I'd say 90% of your traffic.
Okay. I also know you're starting to see more growth down in the south part. Down here, there's more business growth, right? I'm thinking I think last year, no, we haven't yet, I don't believe. Maybe we did. We did move the pole out of the way. There's just a little sliver of right away. I'm thinking if you look a little further down the road into the future, there may be more of a need to have that radius there. I'm thinking at this time, let's do it and improve it for the trucks for the future. I think right now our estimate shows that we can afford to do that. I would recommend doing it now. Because do it while you get the money. You never know when it's going to come around again. So I understand what you're saying there, but we did design it out last year. We almost had it in stage one last year, but we just didn't quite get to the right-of-way phase in time to deliver the job, so we deleted this out of stage one and just added it to stage two. But I would still recommend doing it.
Any businessmen or citizens that have questions for Bob?
I can leave some cards too. And if you, yeah.
Would you state your name for us so that we know you?
Lee Wishon.
Okay.
Can we go back to the slide that basically impacts the station on the corner of the intersection?
This entrance still stays. Unfortunately, it'd be more of an exit entrance. Exit at that point won't be an entrance. It'd be more of an exit. This one stays. This one here is obviously impacted by all this.
And the one that's further up, is that raised or is that just markings on the pavement?
All this is markings.
Okay, and the next one going up?
This?
Yes.
That's the one that was, that's just paint. Well, I put in raised islands to make positive, barriers, if you will, at the intersection right here, this one and this one. Those are the only raised islands that we have in the project.
Okay.
Nothing's going to stop people from shooting across here if they see they have a chance, unless the law enforcement happens to be in the intersection, then that might stop them. But. Oh, coming up this way?
Correct. I'm going to have traffic mix coming in and trying to leave at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't really working for you here then?
No, that was.
And so this one here, we can tweak this. And that's that we can tweak this one. This is why we're here today, is this here was just thrown on a piece of paper as a starting point. And what I'm hearing from you is I think what we need to have here is probably like a left turn or some kind of refuge where they come off here and have a way to get in here, some way to turn up there, maybe leaving the left turn channel center lane in there.
We actually represent both those businesses.
Okay.
And so you're right, one of the corners would be dramatically impacted. Is there any plan for the state to...
I think that's a good question, and what I'd probably do is, what I would do is I'd have get view of contact to talk to our real estate office and go through that process to say what are my options here, basically. And start, that's the starting point.
Okay.
No guarantees what I'm saying here, but at least that's where I would go if I were you. And I can get you a name and a number when we get closer and get you the right people to talk to about that.
Mm-hmm. On the upside for these businesses, everybody that was coming up 24 now and going west on 26 will now be channeled right around in front of your business. So that's the upside. Where normally, they, if they'd come up the spur and take a left, which they won't be able to do, they wouldn't drive by in front of your business, which I'm sure would entice a few more people to stop in. So that's looking at the sunny side of this project.
Talking about looking at those two businesses, you know, maybe they're related, maybe they're not, but technically you've got two separate businesses, and you're channeling that traffic correct to the north end of that lot. You're actually bringing that traffic through that private station there and bringing it into the one on the corner. Is that legit? I mean, technically we're not in a public road there. You're in a private driveway, driving through that driveway to access another piece of property. Because you've got two separate businesses there.
Here? Or? I'm missing something here. The two separate businesses in this corner here.
I think what Ken means by that is when you take the left-hand turn into the Costco station? Is that what it is? 76, okay.
Coming into here.
He thinks you cut through to the next business right there. Is there an opening there?
To the north?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any access past. This is all a barrier of grass and curbing and stuff.
Yeah. So why couldn't that northern yellow mark just be a turn or a open lane like it is right now?
This?
Right and left-hand turns in it.
Yeah. This one right here?
Yeah, don't make it yellow. Just make it like it is, only make it bigger so it forces people into single lane, but you can pull in there and make a right-hand or left-hand turn.
We can look at that, absolutely.
Because then people can use that to get into Bingers, just like you do right now.
Because this one right now is restricting this business right here. Is this the one you're also representing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so and that makes sense. I don't, you know, other than this is just some channelization, but, you know, we're trying to minimize. Obviously, this isn't doing it for you. So,
I just see customers trying to get in and get out to the same area, and now all of a sudden I have a safety hazard. So.
I'll take that one back with me and tweak it.
Any other comments? Business owners, citizens?
Has there ever been a thought of a traffic light or a roundabout? I mean, you drive up. I mean, busy highways, for instance, Highway 17 that goes from Moses Lake, it's littered with traffic lights.
It is. There's
a lot of busy places there, roundabouts everywhere.
There, yeah, you're talking of a signal right here?
Yeah.
There's a lot of challenges to that when you're heading eastbound when the sun's rising or when you're heading westbound when the sun's rising. You're not going to be able to see the lights as well. There's also the grade issue coming over the highway, Broadway. It's a short sight distance when you're coming down to the intersection. That's part of the problem of this intersection. We did explore that. Same thing applies to the roundabout. It's just simply not enough sight distance and reaction time for the drivers. That's why we kind of walked away from those. Good question. Very good. We looked at it. You know, this is not a fun part when you're coming in here talking about all this stuff, because we tried to stay in the intersection itself, but it just kept getting worse and worse when we tried to get away from it. So,
any more questions, Council? Well, Bob, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Look forward to your next design here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, just invite me back when you think you're ready. Or one thing that for timeline,
thank you.
For timeline, we're still looking at for construction sometime next summer. So we really need to nail the final design so we can get into the right-of-way phase. So I'll be looking at for a quick turnaround. I'll go back with my designer, come up with a new plan. What if I send it to you, Eamon? Do you want to do that and funnel it to the council? And then after you have a review, if you want to have me come back and we can have more discussions. But ideally, I do need to get to that point, because the right-of-way phase usually takes the longest. And there's that funding window when we have this money, so I'm really trying to get to that right-of-way phase. So I got to get a design approval. Basically, you guys endorse the design, and then we get into the phase, the right-of-way phase, because usually that does take some time. So, okay, so maybe in a month's time or something like that. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Okay, residential parking code modifications. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor. Council, good evening. Tonight, what I'd like to do, since we've had some previous discussions on parking, is sort of walk you through an exercise where we look at kind of a narrow focus in terms of the parking discussion, and we can come back and deal with other issues of parking as well in the future. But for tonight, what I'd like to do is to kind of direct you to the front yards of residential neighborhoods that are in existing neighborhoods, not new construction since 2006. You may recall we've identified that the code does provide for some pretty significant parking restrictions in new development. So we're looking at those existing neighborhoods for the front yards. And I've identified four areas that have come up in the course of discussions that are outside the current code ability for enforcement. So this isn't, we're not going to be talking about cars that are parked out into the right-of-way or over the sidewalk edge, because we can deal with those through existing code enforcement and existing code. So these are the issues that we've been unable to be effective in any kind of enforcement, because they really are not addressed in our existing code. So Mike, if you could get us to the first slide. What I'm going to present is a photograph that kind of depicts the problem for each of these four areas. Okay. We'll get there.
Problem here. For those that are interested, there's some of Bob's cards on the back table back there. So if you'd like to get them, and you can get a hold of them that way if you have any questions or something. And then we will be bringing up the new, whatever he designs, and have another meeting with you, the businessman, if you're interested. Go ahead, Daryl. Sorry.
Okay. So as we go through this, you'll see a photograph that depicts the basic problem. And if you agree as a council that this is a problem that we need to deal with, then the next slide following each of these photographs will be a slide that provides a potential solution in terms of code language that you could consider for adoption at some future date. But the first one of these that seems to come up quite a bit in discussions is cars parked on the front lawns. This is a fairly frequent occurrence throughout the existing neighborhoods. Here's an example where a car is literally parked right in front of the front door. In this case, you can't see it, but they're straddling an existing sidewalk leading up to the house. There is some debris on the porch, but again, that's not the issue we're dealing with here. Nor is the cars that are parked in the driveway, because they're actually very appropriate in terms of the driveway location for this particular exercise. So the issue here is cars parked on lawns, is that something as a city we want to continue to allow because we don't prohibit it? Or should we be considering code language that would actually put restrictions on this type of parking and allow our code enforcement officer the ability to work with those property owners and correct those? Now, if you feel that that is an appropriate thing for us to take on, then we go to the next slide. There's language that we would recommend on how to deal with this particular issue that would be effective both from a code standpoint and also an enforcement standpoint, and that would be to restrict vehicles. No vehicle shall be allowed to park on landscaped areas. That would include lawns, flower beds, that sort of thing. Parking shall be limited to an improved surface no greater than 30 feet in width, extending perpendicular from the structure to the street. So basically what you do is you force people into a driveway that would be no greater than 30 feet wide, that would extend from the house to the roadway, and that would be the area that's designated for parking. Anything other than that, whether it be lawn, landscape, or just bare ground, would not be available for parking, and that would allow our code enforcement officer to go to that property owner and seek compliance with the code. Now, as a council, is that something that you'd like us to pursue and bring back before you for consideration?
Yes, no?
Yes.
No, not to me.
I see one no and a couple, bunch of yeses. So I'm thinking that that's that, an affirmative response that you'd like us to pursue this, bring it back in more code form in the appropriate location, and bring that for your consideration.
I've heard more complaints about the council trying to get more restrictive on people's personal property than I have about the complaints about a car parked. And I'm not ready to change these ordinances. We went through them again several years ago to try to take care of some of the problems that we had. And like I said, I think we need to work with them still. We need to work with the homeowners, and we need to instill some community pride with them and work with it that way instead of trying to get more restrictive with tougher rules.
So as it is right now, we're letting them drive over the curbs and park in their front lawns to their neighbors.
We have current ordinances that deal with vehicles pulling over the curbs. To deal with that, we have current ordinances that will deal with that.
But you have to catch them doing it, otherwise it's okay.
No, and a person that parks his car up on the lawn overnight, is it going to be harassed because he parks his car there overnight one time? Is he, you know, I don't agree with that.
I think it's time we go from a small town to a nice looking city that encourages professional people to live here and not move out of town. And I think this is, like I said before, Pullman is a college town, and they don't let the kids or anybody park on unimproved surfaces. I think it's time we grow up and get this town looking nice.
Well, based on what I'm hearing from the council this evening, we'll prepare this for a potential code modification and bring this back for your consideration, if that's agreeable.
So, Darryl, what we have right now, the place on 4th, how did you guys get that mostly cleaned up?
Well, we have, if you go by 4th, there are still, and I actually have a photograph of that later in the program, but there are still a number of vehicles that are parked in the driveway on unimproved surfaces, and a recreational vehicle or a boat parked in the lawn. What we did is we actually had a survey conducted on that particular block to identify precisely where the street right-of-way ended and the property line began. And then we were able to enforce our restrictions and requirements for parking within the right-of-way. And so that's what allowed our code enforcement officer to be able to go to that property owner and say, look, we do have code on the books that allows us to regulate the parking within the right-of-way, so you're going to have to move your vehicles or comply with those requirements. They chose to move their vehicles, but they did not, we could not make them move them off of their lawns with the current code. So we were able to provide some relief, but it does not provide a total relief in regards to the overall appearance, but it's improved and certainly safer.
I would also like to mention the council that on all properties owned by the Othello Housing Authority, there is absolutely no tolerance of vehicles parked on the lawns. You'll never see that.
The curb thing creates a problem too. Talking about the 4th, I drove by there like on a Friday or something like that. Boat was gone, trailer was gone. Hallelujah. Came back by on Monday, both of them were back up over the curb and up onto the lawn. Yeah. So what good is that? Has the curb ordinance really done to keep people from doing that?
And we're going to run into the same problem. If we create another ordinance, what's going to stop the people from still doing it if we can't enforce the ones that we have?
I'm not sure. I grew up in Seattle, and you weren't allowed to park. As far as I know, you weren't allowed to park. They had what they call a parking strip between the street and the sidewalk, about 5 feet away. You had to take care of it, but it belonged to the city, and you weren't allowed to do all that stuff. You just didn't.
Hey, Andy.
Before you change that, you've got what states up there, you've got one surface of 30 feet in width. What happens in a corner lot when you've got a access apron of 30 feet facing one street. You've got the same thing facing the other street on the other part of the corner. That gives you 60 feet of parking for cars.
The way that's handled, this is identical language to how we handle it in new developments. And the way that's handled in new developments is that you're only allowed one access to any given lot. Or you can have two accesses, but you have to have 15 feet at each. So you're restricted to a total of 30 feet of driveway access to any legal lot within a development. And so if we were to extend that into existing neighborhoods, your total would be 30 feet. If you chose to have two driveways and it could be found and you're on a corner lot and the site distance was okay and it provided for a safe access, that would be fine, but you would be limited to 15 feet.
We've got one that was just built here recently last winter. They already had a 30-foot driveway. Now they got another 30-foot driveway on the other street. So they've got cars parked on both of
them. And currently we would have no restriction to that unless they were in a development that fell under the new regulations.
So with a 30-foot wide, is that six cars in? Three across?
Well, 30, potentially, I suppose you could do that, depending on how deep you were. But we're going to get in, that's another topic. The number of vehicles is another topic that I'd like to address this evening. So it's one of the four. So we can go on to that if you'd like. Might be good. The next one is actually recreational vehicle parking, again, in the front yards of residences. In this case, we have a boat and what I believe is a converted small bus, into an RV. For the sake of the photograph, we'll say that that's what that is. Both of them are parked in the driveway. And you can see by the photograph, what that has led then is that the vehicle for the house is now parked in the street, because there's no longer any room in the driveway for the cars, and there's no other garage or other opportunity for parking. So the recreational vehicles, the boat and the motorhome conversion, have both taken up the driveway and leaves no room for anything else. So that's one example where RVs have created some difficulty. The other simply is the aesthetics of whether or not you want to support the idea of having recreational vehicles in the front yards. Many communities restrict that. And if you choose to do that, we have prepared some language that could head down that path.
Personally, I'm not ready to go there yet. Baby steps. And this doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother me either. Our streets are very wide, so for a car to be parked on the street.
I'm opposed to on-street storage. I've never been opposed to on-street parking.
Yeah, and we do regulate the storage. That's currently in our code.
Very well.
Yep. Okay. We'll move on. The next one is multiple vehicles. This is the house on 4th, by the way, just for a point of reference. But here you have, you can't see it, but behind the travel trailer is another vehicle. So there's three cars, a travel trailer, and a boat, so a total of five. This is not extremely uncommon. It doesn't take a lot of effort to drive around Othello and see more than three or four vehicles in a driveway. Particularly since people can park on the lawns currently. Keep in mind that in the new communities under new development, the regulations are you can have no more than three vehicles parked outside of the home. So in the new developments, you have a requirement for two-car garage, so there's an opportunity for parking in the garage of two vehicles, and then you're allowed no more than three outside of the garage on a permanent basis. So certainly that wouldn't apply to guests and things, but on a regular basis, the maximum number of vehicles to be stored on residential lots is three in new developments.
Now, do we have on the books a 5-foot setback they can't park in? Supposedly sidewalk?
They can't block the sidewalk. So if there was a sidewalk here, all the vehicles would have to be outside of the sidewalk. The other is if they're parked within the city right-of-way, and in this case, from the outside edge of that curb, if you were to go back 13 feet, is city right-of-way, because we did have that surveyed. But you're allowed to park in city right-of-way as long as it's on an improved surface. So if you were parked in the driveway that was gravel, asphalt, concrete, and you were in the city right-of-way but were not blocking the sidewalk, that would be legal. But if you were blocking the sidewalk, or if you were parked in city right-of-way that wasn't an improved surface, then that would be prohibitive under our current code.
But if you took out one of those vehicles, say you take out that trailer where that second car is parked out there right next to the curb, that would be legal?
It's currently legal because it's on an improved surface, yes.
And because there's no sidewalk, we don't have to imagine that there is.
Right. So the question here really is, how many cars are too many, or how many vehicles? Since RVs are okay, we established that. So how many boats, cars, or combination of all of those are you comfortable with? Are you comfortable with no restrictions, as long as they're on fit within that 30 feet and on an improved surface? If they had a 80-foot long driveway and they could fit six cars would be okay.
Sound like you described all the ordinances that we currently have on books,
mm-hmm.
that will solve any problem that we have with situations like that.
Okay. In this case, you could imagine this particular setting with the boat on the left gone, because that would no longer be allowed if we were to adopt the no parking on the grass, and all of the vehicles that are in the driveway, that would be acceptable both under the current code. He could, yeah. If he could, as many cars as you can fit in that 30-foot section up to your house and not block the sidewalk and not hang out into the road of travel, the road of travel, then you're fine. Because you're not creating a safety hazard and you're meeting the requirements of the current code.
My driveway is currently 25 feet, and I can fit 3 cars wide in there. So if somebody has 30-foot wide,
the cars, and usually you can almost always go too deep. It's pretty rare that you're, because the setbacks for the house plus the 13 feet if you have no sidewalks should give you plenty of room for too deep. So potentially up to 6 cars on average for any given lot.
If we give him 30 feet and say the driveway is 20 feet now, they could improve another 15 feet over on this other side and legally put the boat there if it was on improved surface.
I heard you say 20 feet and then plus 15. It would be 20 plus 10.
10. 10 feet for the boat.
Yes.
They
also
have to do a curb cut.
Yeah, with the curb cut. Or you actually could do it so you could come in with a smaller curb cut and have your driveway such that you could drive over to the improved surface. You don't have to go over curb once the curb cut's in place, but it would be preferable to have the curb cut because chances are they're going to want to back up straight.
Yeah, because somebody with a little fishing boat will say, well, I can unhook it on my driveway, push it across my yard, and store it if I improve that surface there where it is now, and so I don't need a curb cut.
But keep in mind, if you were to pass the first language, the first slide that we saw, and solving the problem with no parking on the grass, and had a 30-foot maximum width to your driveway, then you couldn't have a second access point onto your property, unless you were in a situation on a corner lot where you accessed two roadways. So in this example, to be legal under our code, the boat would have to go if you adopted that first slide language, limiting no grass parking and 30 feet maximum driveway width.
Back to my original question. The driveway's 20 feet. I put 10 feet of concrete where the boat is now. I could park my boat there because I can just push it up my driveway across my yard and put it on improved parking where it is now.
I apologize. I misunderstood your question. If you added 10 feet to the existing driveway next to the red car, then you could do that.
I'm talking about 10 feet where the boat is right now.
You wouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, I thought you said if it was...
I misunderstood your question. You can't have two access points.
I have a total. No, I'm not having two access points because I'm going to go up my driveway, push it across the yard, and then store it there on the separate 10 feet because it's a little aluminum fishing boat and I can just push it over there.
I think that's one we'd have to think about.
Okay. That's what I foresee them saying. Well, I don't go across the curb. I just pull it down my driveway.
Yeah, I actually think that the intent of the code, and we might have to think about how that language is, but the intent of the code really was to try to concentrate the parking in that one allowed driveway on each lot with the exception of the corner lot, because you access two streets. But not to have two improved areas on your front yard where you'd have vehicles stored.
Just a comment. How it looks makes all the difference, I guess, in our perception. People live up in my neighborhood, and on almost any given day, there are 3 to 4 cars in the driveway, and then 2 to 3 cars parked in the street. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how many people live in that house, but there are times when there are 4 cars in that driveway, and they're neatly parked in the standard 2-car garage driveway, and then the other ones are parked in the street. Well, you know, and nobody complains about it because they keep the lawn mowed and the trucks trimmed, yeah. and they're parked where they're supposed to be parked. So,
It is difficult when you begin to create regulation because of specific circumstances that you have no other way to deal with. Most people don't do things that, you know, aren't pleasant for their neighbors. But unfortunately, there are people who do. I think the idea of not having any restriction on the number and having people being able to park reasonably within this given area that's allowed under the proposed code has some merit, because then people who actually do, as you say, do it neatly and do it effectively and don't seem to bother their neighbors when doing it, are fine. We don't have to be after them. But others who can't seem to follow the rules need to be able to have an opportunity to utilize our enforcement authority to be able to take care of those. So,
well, for purpose of discussion, what I would throw out is if new development can park 3. As we start moving toward that, I would say limit older developments to 4. You can get 4 on your improved parking lot in front of your house, and that be the new limit.
Okay, we can bring that forward as an option. Is there anyone else with any thoughts in terms of that number?
I guess if they can get 6 cars on it, I don't have a problem. That's my view, but I don't agree with the 4 thing.
We have standard 2-car garage driveway that's 20 feet wide.
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, there's 5 feet between that and my property line. The guy next door to me has the same thing, and he has 5 feet. And it's either brick or gravel part of it. The problem is the mailbox right in the middle. But we do manage to use it, so there's room enough, even with 25 feet, to get 3 cars.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's conducive to the standard of this community to have 6 cars parked out in front of a house, 3x2.
Well, is there a desire to bring back a number restriction on vehicles, or simply leave it at the area that creates the restriction? Mayor, would you like me to bring that back as an option?
You heard my opinion.
What's the council thinking? So Daryl knows.
For me, it's a no.
Yeah, let the concrete be the restriction. But that's me personally.
Area be the restriction.
As long as they're parking right, I really don't care how many vehicles they.
Okay.
In a lot of ways.
Councilman Swore, I don't think we'll be bringing that one back for a bit.
My floor is going down.
Yeah, I work at Standard Driveway, but their driveway goes way back, and they can get way more than 4 cars on it. And they don't even have to park close to the road.
So I guess we don't need it.
Okay, I think I have direction. The next item, then, we can pass that language, we don't need it, is large commercial-type vehicles. And this is one of the examples I could find. This is just an old bus that's parked in somebody's yard, and we could probably deal with it in a whole host of different levels, but for the purpose of this discussion, it's the parking of commercial vehicles in residential neighborhoods. And how much of a restriction do you feel we need to place on that? There are people who have, you know, Bob's Plumbing, who have those big step vans that bring them home because they take them home each day and drive them away each night. Now, we have some restrictions on permanently parking commercial vehicles and creating a commercial activity within a residential neighborhood. And we do have some allowance for people who bring their vehicles in currently And just under those circumstances where you have a large step van or you know, you have a plumbing or electrical business and you bring home that work truck every night and you take it away the next day. So this may not be much of a problem, but this happened to be one example where I was able to come across in my travels. And if I remember right, this was licensed. It's a legal vehicle, but it clearly doesn't fit the neighborhood, you know, what you think of as a residential neighborhood. So if you feel it's a concern, we can address it. If you feel that this is just an isolated example, we can move on.
If you know the vehicle and you know the person, that's his RV. That's what it's being done. It's being converted. Yeah. That's his RV. And to pull out one particular incident like this, I don't think it's a good enough argument to start to change it.
Okay.
Don't we have some type of restriction already? They can't bring their semis home and park in front of their rigs.
Can't do that.
We have a way
in their houses.
No. This is more the, you know, I guess the thinking here was, do we want to even address the idea of the step vans, you know, those kinds of commercial vehicles that people bring home with them?
I don't have any problem with somebody having a work vehicle that brings it home at night, yeah, and drives it away during the day. I mean, it's not there permanently.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's a pretty good consensus in the council. I'm seeing a lot of agreement with that. So,
what, are we restricting semis strictly based on weight? That what the
is it weight device? And size, isn't it?
Weight and size. It's a 10,000-pound GVW for go taking your vehicle home at night. If it's 12,000 pounds, it's illegal to take it in residential areas. You can go back and forth.
Well,
weight's the big thing. But there is no weight restriction on the RVs. Right? You have a lot of motorhomes nowadays that will weigh 16,000 TBW, and they're able to go into the residences.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it distinguishes them as an RV doesn't have to go into a truck weigh area on the highway then, because they're not under those restrictions.
No.
As far as TBW, not as far as
okay, so we can move on to the last discussion item, and that is the issue of non-conforming lots. If we were to add language to our code that creates an additional restriction, which is the case of the first slide where we do not allow parking on the grass and have to have an improved surface for cars to be parked on, should we provide a reasonable period of time to allow people to bring that into compliance once they're notified? And for the sake of discussion, I just put into this language 90 days because that's kind of the minimum that you have when you create a non-conforming use. And the courts have kind of said that by providing a reasonable period of time, it allows you to create some enforcement action and allows you to have sufficient time to notify those folks and to provide educational materials that brings them into compliance. So 90 days is probably kind of that minimum time frame we'd want to go once we were able to make contact, give people appropriate notice, letting them know the code has changed and that they'll need to make provisions to bring their lot into compliance. And if you think that that needs to be longer or would you prefer to see it shorter, that would be fine too. But we should have some provision that allows for a period of time for these non-conforming lots that would be created to be able to bring themselves into conformance. Yeah, and we'd give him a reasonable period of time to do that, either to make some other arrangements, parking it in back, or providing for some improvements to his driveway so he could park it there. Whatever that case may be in any individual circumstance, there might be some steps that they would need to make to be able to bring their site into compliance. And some of it may have some cost or expense involved, so we'd want to give them a reasonable period of time to be able to do that. And again, 90 days, just kind of that shot in the dark and seemed to be reasonable for that kind of an improvement.
Everybody comfortable with that? Yes?
Do you have allowances in there to stop abuse where they park their Datsun in the front yard for 89 days and all of a sudden a Ford shows up in their front yard, or is it just vehicle?
It would be just vehicles, yeah. It would be, you know, here's your notice. Here's some educational materials. If we can help you in any way, please let us know. And by the way, we'll be back checking. And if in 90 days this vehicle's still here or any vehicle still here in, that is not in conformance with the code, we'll start corrective action.
And again, one of your challenge will be, quote, what is an improved surface? And like I said, Pullman obviously has something.
Well, I think we have to define that, and that we'll add language to that. In new developments, improved surface is concrete or asphalt.
Wow.
And I don't think you want to go there in existing neighborhoods, so I think we'd want to say concrete, asphalt, or gravel surface. So I think that probably would be the minimum that you'd want to go to allow for a gravel surface.
Or it could be brick.
Oh, hard surface maybe would be a better way to get hard surface or gravel, and you could give examples such as brick pavers, because they're actually becoming very popular now, those pavers that you can grow grass through, and concrete and asphalt, you know, some sort of hard surface treatment. But we can provide a definition for that.
Can you define gravel, or am I getting too nitpicky?
Well, we can, you know, we actually could define gravel, and we could come up with a specification of how compact that gravel needs to be based on AASHTO standards, but then we'd have to figure out a way how we're going to enforce that and make that determination, and that may become very difficult. So there becomes a reasonable level of expectation, I think, written into code to where you shouldn't have to go to that level of detail.
There'll be a few rebels that'll throw a couple of shovelfuls of gravel on and say it's in gravel. But
well, we could even say a gravel base minimum of 2 inches thick or something.
Kind of like what's up at Walmart.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry about that. Yeah. You know, like 3 inches mass, a couple inches deep, it'll compact down.
Yep.
Get really big, but then this thing will start shoving out. Minus probably would be suitable, like a couple inches deep.
I think
I stopped in and talked to Daryl one day, and we were talking about, you know, people that, you know, if you're going to drop this bill on them and stuff like that. And it's, you know, we kind of talked about the fact of maybe the city would come in and fix that and just add the cost of the gravel or whatever it is to your utility bill over a certain period of time. So take care of that pain without it would be too painful to have to go, you know, take a big flat loan and all that kind of stuff. So whether the city could provide the gravel and then they'd pay for it. I don't know, that's just a way to get around the cost, maybe.
And I'm sure we can set up a program if that's something the council's interested in. It wasn't part of my proposals this evening, but
prefer us not to.
Yep.
Time a lot of money.
That's what banks are for.
Okay, well, I think we have clear direction, and we'll bring that back. I would think at your, perhaps not your next meeting, but the meeting following that, and bring that in ordinance form and make modifications based on that one section that you've have given some positive feedback on. So we'll be bringing that back to you.
Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you.
Okay, 2.03, ordinance to allow for electrical vehicle charging in residential zones. Darrell, again.
Yes, I just wanted to bring this one to your attention because we will be bringing forward to you an ordinance that will modify the existing code in order to bring us into compliance with state law. In 2009, the Washington State Legislature passed HB 1481 into law, and what that basically did was set up a time frame in which certain communities had to comply with the idea of providing for the ability to install electrical charging stations for electric vehicles. The main focus was along the I-5 corridor from Canada to Oregon, and it actually created what is dubbed the first electric highway in the nation. For the state of Washington. And as you go along that area now, most of that area is now in compliance. They've been required for a number of years to allow these charging stations, and most of the rest stops in that area have charging stations, for example. The requirement that the legislature passed was that this would be phased in over a variety of communities depending on their size, and then by 2011, July of this year, 2011, all communities in the state of Washington would have to have provisions within their ordinances that allowed for these charging stations. Now, there are some exceptions to that. For instance, you do not need to allow large commercial operations in residential zones. But, for example, you do need to allow them in school parking lots and in other areas where the community generally might congregate and need those facilities. So while they didn't specifically say it, the interpretation has been churches and other facilities could not be prohibited from having these. There's no specific requirement that the city install them. There's no requirement that anyone property owner installs them. It's merely a provision in our code that allows for them to be installed should someone choose to do that. In other words, we can't restrict them under certain circumstances. So I just wanted to give you some background on that. We'll be bringing that ordinance forward to you in a time frame to where we'll be in compliance. So that means your next meeting or the following meeting after that, one of your action meetings in June. And it should be a pretty simple procedure. It's not going to be a terribly lengthy ordinance modification. Simply, we'll have a statement that indicates the city of Othello will not prohibit electrical charging stations in certain zones and in certain applications.
Daryl, I kind of read through some of that stuff. I think there's only 37 pages in that.
It's amazing how much paper we can use to save the planet.
Yeah, kind of save all the trees. I was looking at that, and it's kind of not really sure where they're going with this, because they broke this thing out not only residential, what you're talking about, as all of us generally go out and charge our battery or whatever in our gas-powered cars. You know, it's no big deal for a resident to be able to do that. But as you dig into some of that, they're talking about public parking lots, private parking lots, parking garages and things like that. Mm-hmm. And also, like up and down, say, Main Street, you've got parking out there for people to park there. Ever so often, you're supposed to have one of these charging stations. So I guess my question is, how far down the road is it going to be and where it's going to be required to say a city has to do this, like out in our streets or in our parking lot here in front of City Hall or a school or whatever. They don't really specify where it's at. I know where they're doing. They're setting the groundwork, trying to figure out where we're going and what's going to happen. So.
Yeah, well, the current legislation has no regulatory requirements that the city take any action other than modify your codes to ensure that you don't prohibit them in certain circumstances. Will the day ever come where the city has parking meters that you pay not only to park but to plug into? That may be someday. You might choose that the market or the public demands that. I know the community where my family's from in North Dakota, they have parking meters with electrical outlets, but it's not for electric vehicles. It's to heat up your blocks on the cars. And you pay for the time to be able to plug in to do that. So, you know, that in that case, the community has a need. And if there gets to be enough demand for that, I'm hoping that the state is believing that private enterprise will step in and take up that cause. And I actually believe that will occur. But for now, there is no regulatory requirement that imposes the city install anything other than to provide for the allowance that they could be installed by others.
Any other questions for Daryl? Citizen questions?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Consolidated Disposal Service Incorporated Biannual CPI Rate Adjustment. Eamon?
You have a letter from Consolidated Disposal Corporation requesting the biannual, every 2 years, rate increase. This is actually the eighth contract amendment to the basic contract that was done in 1994. The CDSI company is asking that we adopt the eighth contract amendment, which puts in place a 2.1% increase, which is the average of the past 2 years' CPI. So that's the cost to the city. Now, in the past, way back in 02, 03, and 04, if I recall correctly, the Solid Waste Disposal Fund was in a deficit. At that time, the City Council ramped up at a 6% clip for 3 years. We finished that process, and virtually both the solid waste fund and the reserve fund are very flush right now with 151,000, 172,000, something like that, 171,000. So the question before the council is twofold. One, to adopt the eighth contract amendment, and two, to absorb that within the city infrastructure and the cost that we're receiving currently, as our recommendation of staff is that we not pass this increase on to the local consumer, and that's every resident in the city, because we have sufficient funds in both the operating fund and the reserve fund. You have the letter from Consolidated, a copy of the eighth contract amendment, a breakdown of the current city garbage rates and the new rates, and the agenda memo. Are there any questions relative to the CDSI request?
Question. The letter refers to disposal rate is $70 per ton, but it's proposed to be lowered as of July 1st, 2012. Do you know the basis of that?
We actually have a member of the SWAC committee, the Solid Waste Committee on Council, and Ken Kaler and I talked about that today, and he'd like to speak to that tonight.
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking at this from a SWAC standpoint, I think that tipping fee is going to be lowered. I can't say that it's going to be lowered, but looking at their contracts and the way they're operating, the grant money is pretty well gone, what they used. Do a lot of the work on both Mitchellville and also our landfill out here. But I think that that fee will probably be lowered from that $70, and I think it'll be back down to about 60, which will help that. And then also, one reason why this has happened, a lot of this material that goes into both Mitchellville and Bruce out here, they're recycling a lot of that. They're able to pick up a pretty good fund off of that. Every time that they pick up stuff, they take it out there, they sort through it, they sort out the metals and cartons and whatnot. As long as it's good stuff, they keep those separated. With that grant, they were able to obtain a baler, which they can bale all that cardboard and whatnot together, and then they get the premium price for it. So I think that they'll be able to hold their expenses where it shouldn't be a burden on anything. So I agree with this, and I think it's great that we can still maintain the same rate and still not jeopardize what we're doing in as far as the solid waste or as far as the disposal and whatnot of this waste.
And the realization, I believe, is the cost of the county will be reduced, and therefore that will reflect in the annual or the overall tipping fees per ton.
So, Heyman, when we get together to vote on this, could we see rough guesstimate how much going to reduce our fund down?
Sure.
The total for this year would be about $4,900.
So, is that all? Okay.
Yeah, it's only, it's a $15 bill for citizens, 2% of like 30 cents a month, so it's really pretty minimal.
This year would be, it's a full impact, would be about $10,000.
Oh, okay.
But then we would deal with that in the budget process.
But if the price per ton went down, because you realize what we charge citizens is what we pay the
CDSI?
Company.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the tipping fee, which is if that goes down,
right. It'd be a wash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be to our benefit. We might have to. We'd probably start building reserves again.
Yeah. We actually build reserves every year, and I keep trying to budget so that we're using up reserves, and it never works. It just keeps building up reserves. I don't know if it's because we're adding residences or what it is, but every year it just keeps creeping up. We used 48,000 of the reserves for the Main Street project this year, spent down to about 150 grand. But there's a good fund balance in the fund right now. So it's pretty amazing.
Now, just to be clear on what Mike said, when he said it was for the Main Street project, I'm assuming you're meaning it was part of the Main Street project.
Alley approaches relative to the Main Street project. That's correct.
Okay.
I think we've got a lot of areas we can use some of that money in these alleyways and whatnot, because we do need some improvement on some of those alleys. Some of them are in pretty tough shape. I know that they've done a lot of grading and whatnot this year, and they've improved them a lot. But we can still expand our apron on a lot of these alleyways and whatnot. It would help a lot, I think, keep that gravel off the streets, too, if you had that portion of that, the apron there, that 20 feet would help, it, even in a residential area, it would make a big difference.
Also, we have a fairly large mountain of grindings that we would like to refine and put those in the alleys and whatnot, and that would... that would come out of this fund also.
Personally, I'd say let it ride. I don't think it's
That's the recommendation from staff.
Okay.
Okay, so with that concurrence, we'll put this on the consent agenda for next week, because we have a fairly large agenda next week.
Okay. 2.05, resolution to authorize use of Lyons Park Othello School District Summer Food Program. Amen.
Thank you, Mayor. And also thanks to Jeanette Root for being here, staying through all the presentations. So she represents the Othello School District, right? Okay. The school district has received some funding to provide a summer feeding program. And to do that, they've asked to use the shelter number one, which is closest to the tennis courts, to do that. Basically an hour a day, 11:30, 12:30. They bring their own containers and remove their own garbage, trash, same day. They have asked for one parking stall to park their van in that would bring supplies and food and things. So we would designate that for them for the summer program. There will be no buses or no transportation to the area, as the individuals that partake of the program either walk or their parents bring them to the program. So it wouldn't be really a disturbing or upsetting any other function of the either the traffic pattern or the parking or the use of the shelter number one. The one small downside is we lose that to rent out on a daily basis, whatever that shelter fee would be. So we are asking that the council waive that shelter fee and enter into a facility use agreement with the Othello School District. And of course, they would provide the insurance that we require that goes along with that.
Questions? Go ahead.
You mentioned about losing the shelter. If set up and tear down, I mean, are we just losing it from 11 to like 1 and we could rent it out times on either side of that?
Yes, we can still rent it out either side of that, absolutely. That's why they have a very limited time there. And it doesn't take them long to put the supplies out and pack them up.
I think this is a great program, and I think we should go along with the school district and partner with them.
Okay.
Not anyway.
Is this something you want in the consent agenda?
Yes, if the concurrence of you and the council, Mayor, if we can do that. Again, I think we've gone through the details here, but we do have a large agenda next week.
Okay. Yeah. Good.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeanette.
Okay, committee reports. Anybody? Pool committee at all or anything?
I don't know whether you noticed or not. Put out more propaganda here for you, but a couple more committees I said on. This one is a brand new map that the Cooley Corridor has put out. It kind of shows everybody opened it up because they have a hard time putting it back together. But there's some back there on the back table too. You're welcome to have those or whatever. And then there's also a seat byway booklet back there. But anyway, the Cooley Corridor put this out. They gathered some funds, and I received a couple boxes of these today. So I have plenty of them. There'll be a little article in the paper about where you can get more of them from and whatnot. But they're kind of neat. They just show a little bit of the whole Coulee Quarter up and down it. It's still alive, and I hope it's progressing. We're working on it. This other one here is put out by the state. This is your tax dollars working. We almost didn't have this, but we were able to convince them, hey, we still need this booklet out. And it shows all the byways in the state of Washington. It's got, it breaks down each one of them. Of course, the Coulee Quarter is in that too. And I also sat on that committee for the state, and we put this together. There is one mistake in it with the Coulee Quarter. It says it's only 100 miles. And I tried to get that corrected, but I see it's still only 100 miles. It's 155 miles. They say you can drive it 2.5 hours. If you're flying an airplane, yeah, you can do it. Otherwise, no. But anyway, it's really good reading material, and it's put out, like I say, by the state, and it's very informative.
Good. Thank you very much for serving on that. Anybody else?
Really quick, we had a pool meeting last week, and I think we got some stuff that we're going to bring back next week for the council for approval, and yeah. The pool should be opening up this weekend.
Concession fees.
Yes.
So. My daughter said there were kids in it today, so I'm guessing that's swim team?
Swim team.
Training. That, but the swim team has the option to use it this week, don't
yes.
they?
Yes. They may have been there, Mark. I only know lifeguards right
there. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, it does. Nice and clean.
Yeah. We started taking registration for swim today. Absolutely.
Good.
We have an ACDC meeting this Thursday here in Othello at 6 o'clock. So if you want to listen in on what they're talking about, you're welcome to come into the meeting.
Good, thank you. Okay, unfinished business.
Oh, I knew this would be unfinished. Just check, Ken, did they get the handicap access to the museum done?
No. Looks great.
Perfect.
Yep. Any other unfinished business? New business. Mark?
Okay. Again, we had a disconnect related to the lights at the ball fields. I believe it was the consensus of the council that we light up the new basketball court. And I don't know if we missed that or the contractor missed that, but the new basketball court did not get lit up in our lighting project.
Yeah, let me check on that, Mark. I believe you're correct.
I don't know if it was. Hopefully it was in the bid and it wasn't. Well, I don't know what the engineers put in the bid. But.
I drove by there the other day and the posters up there, the lights are going this way. I thought you were supposed to light the other one too. I thought you said to do it.
Yeah. The old court actually has two lights from the tennis court shining that way and then two poles out there shining out. I don't know if you can use those same poles and go the other way. I thought it was, did you folks remember, did we want that the new basketball court lit up?
Yeah, we talked about it.
We did too.
Okay, here, this one, I'm going to open a can of worms. There is now available private windmills you can buy and install in your yard that are 30 to 40 feet high and provide electric power. It is my preference that those don't get built in the city of Othello. Not that I'm against renewable alternate power, but I think they would be noisy, eyesore, and dangerous. So I don't know if there's anything on our code that prevents those from going up, or if the consensus of the council we have something, or maybe you guys think.
Right now we do not have a height restriction on like antennas and things.
There's no height restriction?
Only on buildings.
So is this something the council would like Daryl to look into and bring back to us to talk about later? Or?
I say yes. I'd like to nip it in the bud. There's plenty of it. Thousands of acres of farmland around here where you can put a windmill without putting it in my town.
comes into town to take care of this problem we've got with Grand County Power.
The next problem is individual atomic generators burying the ground. Build big holes, set it down in here, and provide power for, hey, they're got there.
It's something, I see what your point is, Mark, you know, and I might say something. It's also my opinion. I really don't want to discourage renewable energies too, but it is something to take a look at and see, because I know they're constantly improving on these things, so they get very quiet. Whether it's a visual problem or if it's going to be a sound problem, but it would be worthwhile looking into.
Maybe what other communities are doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
If they're.
Yes. They want to hear what other.
I'll give your source, Mark, but I haven't read anything.
It was just in the Tri-City Herald.
Yeah, it was in something recently.
About it.
I remember.
And it reminded me when we were talking about the plug-in cars. Everybody thinks it looks so far out in the future, but it's potentially somebody could do it tomorrow if they had the bucks and the will.
I would like to see some of what other towns are doing with height restrictions and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bad enough looking in somebody else's yard to buy a 35-foot tower out there.
Winding around. Yeah.
Any other new business? Okay, we're going to go. The City Council will now adjourn to an executive session for 20 minutes to discuss property purchase. So we'd have to ask everybody to leave, other than Eamon, I guess, and make sure the mics are off, Rebecca. 20 minutes.